The interior of the steel box was hot and smelled of rust and urine, feces and blood. The sunlight shining in through the open door forced the man chained to one of the walls to squint to protect his eyes. Baron de Man, dressed in an immaculately clean lab coat, entered the steel box and pinched the end of his nose to fight off the stench.
Ugh, I thought you said this stinkhole was hosed down.
It was done last night, sir.
I want it clean just before I enter, understand?
Maybe he emptied his bowels this morning when we told him you'd be visiting.
The rest of the sect men laughed, but the Baron wasn't impressed. The laughter quickly died. Baron de Man stopped, several feet from where the prisoner was chained up by his arms. They'd hoisted him up onto the wall just high enough so that his feet were off the floor, and his arms had to carry all his body weight. After a few days in that position, his arms had stretched enough for him to get his toes onto the floor, relieving some of the load on his arms, but not the pain. The Baron looked at the man's feet touching the floor of the box.
Crank him up another 6 inches.
Two sec men turned a winch handle that reeled in several links of chain, lifting the prisoner higher up on the wall.
Now, you little rad-blasted bag of scum, have you had the chance to think about what I asked you?
Yeah, I've been thinking.
And?
The prisoner's head shifted to the right, and he opened his eyes against the invading sunlight. His dry, cracked lips parted, and his tongue appeared over his bottom lip like that of a lizard.
Go to hell!
And that disappoints me, because I liked you. Anyone who thinks they can get away with skimming Jack off the top of my operation has either got the biggest pair of cojones in the entire ville, or he's the stupidest rad-blasted fuck alive.
In truth, Demand knew that Des wasn't really the one who had been skimming off of him. But the scumbag knew who did, and the Baron wouldn't desist until he'd gotten his answer. Demand had an idea who the real culprit was, but he needed Des's confession to be absolutely sure. He was also fairly certain Des wouldn't lie to him once he was broken, since torture was usually an effective means of getting the truth, brutal as it was. Honestly, Demand wasn't the torturing type. He was going through the motions, and he wondered if Des could tell. For his part, the prisoner just turned his head to the side, as if he'd heard the Baron's spiel before.
I know you're not stupid, because if you were, that would make me stupid for putting you into a position to rip me off. That means you've got to have grade-A plums in that scrotal sack of yours. And I like that.
Des still said nothing.
I like that, but it's not exactly a good thing for you to have. See, if by now you had told me you were sorry, I would have had to think about forgiving you. And if I'd forgiven you, then maybe you'd already be dead instead of hanging around inside this steel box waiting for me to let you die. But since you still haven't come around to being sorry for what you've done, I gotta make an example of you so no other sect men get any bright ideas about trying to cut themselves a piece of my pie.
Des tried to spit again, but all that came out of his mouth was dry air that hissed as it passed through his lips.
I guess that means you haven't changed your mind.
Fuck you, you asshole!
You really want to live, huh? Hang in there as long as you can.
It was now or never. He hoped Des wouldn't call his bluff.
Well, I'm going to make sure you hang in a long, long time, asswipe.
He turned to the sec man on his right.
Bring it here.
The sec man moved forward, carrying a clear plastic bag filled with a clear liquid. There was a pale white rubber hose coming out of one end of the bag, and a needle connected to the end of the hose.
This will keep you hydrated, Des. It'll be like you're drinking, but you'll never have the pleasure of feeling the water sliding down your throat.
The Baron moved forward, climbed up onto a step provided for him by a sec man, then jabbed the needle into a vein in the prisoner's arm.
No.
Finally, the Baron was getting somewhere.
Oh, yes. I'm going to keep you alive as long as I can, just to hear you scream.
The Baron moved in close to Des, so there were just inches between their faces.
And when I get tired of that music, I'm going to add some junk to the bag. Stuff I'm experimenting with that will eat away at your brain till there's nothing left but goo.
He paused, gauging Des's reaction. The poor fellow seemed to have a hard time forming one. It was time to place that final bet.
Finally, when it's more work than it's worth to keep you around, I'm going to put a few crazed muties in this box with you and watch.
No!
That got your attention, eh? good. Think about those muties crawling all over your body, looking for junk.
No, no, wait, it wasn't me.
Excuse me?
It was Robards. Sold new drugs to the muties. Had the white coats make it for him without your knowledge. Said he'd kill my wife if I didn't cover for him.
Robards. Just as he thought. Even though he'd had his suspicions, DeMann still found himself angry at the confession. But now was not the time to lose one's head. Now was the time to plan. And unfortunately, to truly deal with Dess.
Thank you, Dess. And don't worry about your wife. I'll make sure nothing happens to her. However, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but if I let you live, there's a chance Robards will find out you squealed. But if it will make you feel better, I have my own plans for him. Make sure this man's death is as painless as possible. He deserves that much.
DeMann turned his back on the prisoner and was on his way out of the box, followed by half a dozen SecMen. When they were all outside, the SecMen closed the steel doors in silence, knowing they would never see the man inside again. It gave them all something to think about, especially since former Sec Chief Desmond used to be a SecMen once, just like them. At the other end of the ville, a door opened on a large steel box. From somewhere inside the box came a gnawing, high-pitched mechanical whine that rose in pitch and then suddenly settled down into a staccato hum. People outside the box turned to look in the direction of the sound. And then, all at once, a man atop a motorized, two-wheeled wag suddenly burst from the opening. The wag's engine whined as the vehicle sent a plume of dirt and dust into the air behind it. The gate to the ville opened slowly, and for a moment it appeared as if the man on the wag would crash into it. By the time he reached the gate, there was just enough space for him to slip through the opening. The wag raced toward the western horizon. In seconds, the driver and wag were little more than a trail of dust in the distance. The cry of the engine began to fade. In minutes, they were gone from view. Jack and Mildred were led down a long, dark corridor that smelled, if Mildred remembered correctly, of disinfectant. That, of course, was impossible, since the manufacture of such things as disinfectant and household cleaners died with the new cost. Still, she sniffed at the air and caught the unmistakable scent of pine.
Smell good. Clean.
I guess we won't have to worry about conditions being sterile.
When they reached the end of the corridor, the sec man guiding them opened a door that led into a white room that was well lit by windows and portals cut into one of the walls.
A healer has been sent for. He should be here in a few ticks.
Mildred nodded her thanks. She helped Jack up onto a wooden bed covered with linen, and when he was comfortable, she took a look around. The room was small, but at first glance it appeared to be well stocked. Mildred made a closer inspection of the room and saw a variety of bottles and vials that were labeled with names of medicines and drugs she hadn't seen or even thought about in a long, long time. There were bottles of cyanide, which she knew could be made from the seeds and pits of apricots, peaches, apples, and wild cherries. Next to the cyanide were several vials of a whitish powder that Mildred guessed was arsenic trioxide. She turned one of the vials and read the label, proving herself right. Seeing the two poisons on the shelf gave Mildred a bad feeling, but further study revealed that this was a shelf storing nothing but poisons. There was another shelf in the room that appeared to be stocked with a variety of dried herbs that were often used for medicinal purposes. She suddenly felt better about the setup. The first one she picked up was dried echinacea, which was excellent against infections and externally for skin abrasions. Next to that were dried elderflowers, which were also good for skin ailments. Farther along were dried ginkgo leaves, good for a half dozen or so diseases, especially those to do with the mind. She continued down the shelf past ginseng and hops, kava and lemon balm, St. John's wort, and valerian. These were all wonderful herbs and useful for the treatment of mild ailments, but none of them were strong enough to fight off an infection from a bullet wound. Mildred looked for something stronger and found it locked inside a cabinet in one corner. The doors to the cabinet were wooden framed panels of chicken wire. Just behind the wire, she saw jars of dried hemp leaves, more commonly known during pre-dark times as marijuana or cannabis, which could be used as a sedative or postoperative painkiller. Next to the hemp were containers full of poppy seeds, which were an essential ingredient in the production of opium, as well as painkillers such as morphine and codeine. These were the types of medicine Jack would need, but they were also dangerously addictive. However, behind the poppy seeds, Mildred saw several bowls filled with large green and yellow fungi, some of them excreting a yellowish fluid from the ridges and folds of their surface. If Mildred remembered her botany and biology correctly, penicillin was basically an antibiotic compound taken from molds of the genus Penicillium. If she was right, and she was sure she was, then she was probably looking at the medicine's raw material. This was what she needed. Jack, lying back on the bed exhausted, also noticed the medicines with a disdainful expression.
Ugh. Just seeds and leaves.
They may just be seeds and leaves to you, Jack, but to someone who knows what they're doing, they can be made into powerful drugs.
Joe, a dream?
Well, there's no sign of that. But if the Baron knows how to make good drugs like penicillin, then he can probably make the bad ones, too.
Not want drugs.
Mildred came over to his side and opened up the pressure bandage she'd put over his wound.
I think that's wise, Jack, but you might not have a choice in the matter.
Make sure you're safe.
Mildred patted Jack on his good shoulder.
Don't worry, my young friend. I'll look after you.
Just then, the door to the room opened, and a tiny older man dressed in a clean lab coat came into the room, moving to Jack's side quickly. He had a thick mustache and thinning black hair combed over his hairless pate.
What's the problem?
He has a flesh wound that needs some attention.
Playing with knives, eh, young man?
Jack looked at the man for a moment and wondered if he knew something about Jack's talent with throwing knives.
Mutie shot me.
Is that so?
The man unlocked the doors to the cabinet, then opened up the chicken wire doors. After a moment's consideration, he took out several containers and began mixing items on a shiny steel square that sat on top of the counter.
Being stoop outside the wall, were you?
Mildred noticed Jack reaching for one of his leaf-bladed throwing knives and put her hand out to stop the teen from doing anything foolish.
Not that it's any of your business, but we're outlanders who came across a couple of muties who were about to rape and chill two of this vill's women.
Which women?
I believe their names were Eleander and Moira.
The man stopped mixing herbs and turned to face Mildred. For a moment, he just looked at her and Jack in turn.
My name's Katz. I run the Vill's pharmacy, so if there's anything you need, I'll see that you get it.
Mildred was startled by the sudden change in the man's attitude, but was glad he'd come around, because now Jack would be less inclined to chill him where he stood.
What are you preparing for him?
She tried to do her best to sound curious, but not reveal any of her medical knowledge.
An antibiotic for the wound and a painkiller to get him through the night.
Aren't you going to fix the hole in his shoulder?
I'm what you'd call a chemist. If he takes these medications long enough, he'll probably recover from his injury.
No offense, Katz, but I'd like to be a little more sure than just probably. Do you mind if I work on him a bit first before you give him the drugs?
If you think you'll know what you're doing, then fine. Easier for me.
I'll need a few things.
Like I said before, anything you need, I'll see that you get it. As long as we have it here in the Vill, of course.
I'll need a strong needle.
We've got plenty of those.
Some thread or fine string, some boiled water, and maybe a few sterile cloths?
Not a problem.
And then when I'm done, you can give him the antibiotics.
What about a painkiller?
Jack looked at Mildred. Judging by the look in the teenager's eyes, he could use some.
Maybe a small dose of morphine for now, just to see how he reacts to it. A small dose. Do you hear me?
Sure, whatever you say.